You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, September 25th, 2023, and you're listening to me, Grandpa Dan, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. The weekend has already flown by. We're kicking off the work week, and whatever's brought you here, I'm glad you decided to start your work week off with us here at Radio Albion. Encourage you to check out all our great content. Monday through Friday, we have something new up every day, so I invite you to be sure and check all of that out. As always, I like to remind you that I do continue to put our Sven Longshanks links here on the Daily Nationalist show on each show note down at the bottom. You can write him a letter, send financial support. There's all sorts of ways to do that. Those are all linked right here. Encourage you to do so. I use the email system. It's much better than depending on the snail mail. For me personally, again, for the financial support, I use the Give, Send, Go. It's the easiest way in the world, especially if you don't live in the UK. You know, you send US dollars to Britain, and whoever receives those has got to convert them into pounds sterling. You can get all around that when you use the Give, Send, Go because it converts it for you automatically. Now you wind up giving a little more, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's totally, I think, the most efficient way to do so. But at the very least, please at least drop the man a note or postcard, something in the mail. Recently had our letters from Longshanks 2 on the Parish of the Patriots a couple weeks back. And, Sven is mentioned again that he's receiving your cards and letters and notes, and it does mean a whole lot to him. So I always want to encourage y'all. I know most of y'all are already very well aware of that, and I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but I do want to make it a point to always try to bring that up here on these shows. Now, for today's subject, I'm going to discuss something, and a lot of times it could be kind of boring, hopefully, with yours truly. Discussing this, we won't make it boring, and hopefully it'll be a little bit interesting. And that is something that gets not mentioned a lot because we've got so many other things going on, so many other distractions. We've of course got the war in Ukraine, by extension World War III is marching on. It just keeps it continuing step by step escalating. I keep thinking on that front that one of these days, when official bombs and missiles start dropping on NATO countries, people are going to be shocked. How did we get here? But all you have to do is look at what is happening. Every country in the world right now is picking a side, and the U.S. is trying to pry people out of the Russian sphere and vice versa. I think the Russia-China sphere is having more success because they have more to bring to the table. The U.S. brings bullying, weird social programs, and debt, and threats, and things such as this, where Russia and China, I believe, are all able to offer a sweeter deal. The only reason pretty much anybody sides with the U.S. is just because they're afraid not to. I saw a story here a while back that Mexico basically made a public statement siding with the U.S., but then they amended, as a part of that, they said, because of our close proximity to the U.S., we kind of have no choice. Translation, look, we're having to do this because basically it's like we're being held hostage. We've got these tranny agendas. We've got all of these different things going on. The whole, they're trying to do this transgenderism in the school. How quickly we went from gay marriage to then they started, we've got to be more accepting of transgenders and then promoting transgenders. And I mean, within what seemed like a couple of weeks, practically, they're in the schools openly promoting it among kids. When just a few months earlier, if you said this is what they're going to do, they would accuse you of being a conspiracy theorist. You have all of these different tumultuous things and uncertainty and all of this going on. And a subject like this, like we're going to discuss today, fades into the background because it's not so in your face. It's not, you know, in your face, slapping you around like, oh, we're going to teach your kids to be transgender. And if you don't like it, the state will come in and take your children. It's not like the censorship that the government is behind, whether or not they use a proxy. Isn't it funny? The government uses these proxies. We know that the U.S. and its puppet states are fighting a war with Russia right now. And it's a proxy war. They're using the Ukraine. So they think this gives them some kind of word wizardry, plausible deniability. Well, it isn't us doing it. It's the Ukraine. They do the same thing with the censorship. They censor you. The government is censoring your content on social media. But what they do is they bully the social media companies into doing that. And then the government says, well, we're not violating your First Amendment rights. These private companies, these corporations are just choosing to do that on their own. Even though now there's a mountain of evidence that the government is indeed behind that. But as they're fighting a proxy war in this front, they're fighting a proxy censorship war against their own citizens, just as they're fighting a proxy war with Russia. In either case, their lawyer wordism, their little word magic games that they use to pretend like they're supposed to bedazzle you, it doesn't change the fact. They're fighting a war against Russia, and they're fighting a war of censorship against their own citizens. They're ginning up the COVID. Again, they're getting ready to warm that up. Dr. Johnson on last Thursday's Daily National has an excellent show up here on Radio Albion about the vaccine. And they've got that going on. The point here is we've got all of these things going on, and a topic like debt tends to get kind of drowned out. It's in the background. It's boring. It's not exciting. It's not something that's going to make the headlines. And yet, it is nonetheless, it's not less important, I should say, than any of these other things. And it's a ticking time bomb, so as to speak. An interesting aspect of debt, as we know in the Bible, it basically says the debtor is subject to the lender. When you go into debt, you are subject to the lender. There's a certain amount of slavery, slave-master relationship involved. For instance, for you personally, if you're in debt, if you're paying on a car loan, for instance, and you're dependent on your job to pay those payments, and the more debt you have, the more dependent you are on your employer. As a result of that, your employer can treat you in a more and more crappy and dehumanizing manner, and you're going to be more and more likely to put your head down and take it. Because you got to make these payments. You got bills to pay. Saw this during the COVID. People submitted themselves and took those shots because I got to keep my job. People walked around and wore the mask when they knew it was BS because, well, I got to for my job. I've got bills to pay. If they weren't in a slave master relationship with their employer, they could just say, well, I'm not going to do that. Employers say, well, if you don't, you won't have a job. Well, if they didn't have these bills, if they didn't have these debts, they'd have the freedom to walk away and flip them off and say, it's fine. Take your job and shove it. Insert some Johnny paycheck there. Take this job and shove it. But you don't have that freedom because you're in debt. The debtor is in servitude to the lender. This takes on a whole nother meaning. You see how it applies to your personal life. We just gave a little example here. The more debt you are in, the less freedom that you have because you've got to make these payments. Now, it takes on an even more interesting meaning when you apply it to the federal government. If the same principle applies, and I do believe it applies, then the government is massively in debt, and thus the government is in massive amounts of servitude to the lender. You all know I cringe when I hear people talk of the government prints all this money. I hate that terminology because the government isn't, yes, they print the money, but they are not the ones who create the money. People don't understand. Y'all probably understand. I'm preaching to the choir to a large extent. I get that. But people think the government is the one that creates all of this money. Like they owe it to themselves. And I've heard people make that argument. The debt doesn't matter because the government, we owe the money to ourselves, but we don't. I've heard supposed PhD economists make that argument when it comes to talking about this debt. They'll say it doesn't matter because we owe the money to ourselves, but we don't owe the money to ourselves. The government does not owe this money to themselves. The money is created by the Federal Reserve, and as you all know, regardless of the name, the word federal being inserted into the name has nothing to do with the federal government per se. It is the banks. It is the big banks, not your little local bank. They're talking about the big banks. They are the ones. The Federal Reserve is the ones who create the money. They are the big banks, and the government is subject to the lender. You can vote all you want. You can interchange. You can swap out all of these people that you want to by voting, and it doesn't matter because the government as an entity is the debtor, and they are in servitude to the lender, which is the Federal Reserve, which is not the government. As thus, they are going to essentially do what they're told. For today's story, we're using RT. And the title of the story is U.S. National Debt Passes New Landmark, with a subheading of the country's gross financial liabilities topped $33 trillion for the first time on record. The advantage of getting older is you look back, you know, and you remember. Remember when the debt like hit $1 billion and people were like, oh my God! This is crazy. We got to get it under control. And yet, here we are. Here we are today. U.S. national debt has hit a record high of $33 trillion, according to a daily report detailing the nation's balance sheet published by the Treasury Department on Monday. The real-time U.S. debt clock website has put the actual debt level at 33.04 trillion and the debt to GDP ratio at 122.4%. Now, it's even worse than that. You look at that and say, wow, the debt is 120 something percent over the GDP. But then you have to remember that the GDP numbers are basically meaningless. They're like cooked books. Real meaningful GDP would relate to the amount of production capacity that the economy has, and this would relate to things you actually create. But again, you have to remember that the U.S. economy is a financialized economy. GDP largely relates to interest being charged, so you're actually putting it up against, to a certain extent, you're actually measuring this against interest paid. Against all of this financialization, all of this usury. This is what usury run amok looks like. They're measuring this against a GDP that is also fake. It's not about actually producing anything. It's about financialization. GDP, it relates to interest being charged and how much usury is being charged here and there and rent seeking and all of the rest of it. And it's all fake. It's not related to actual meaningful production of things that people can use. When you realize this, you realize it's much worse than what they're saying, and what they're saying is bad enough, because once those dominoes start falling, what are you going to prop it up with? Well, you're basically backing up debt, and you're going to see a common theme here, I think, as we go through this story. You're essentially paying debt with more debt. You're measuring this against GDP, which is largely itself being measured as a production of something, but all they're producing is more debt. They're just paying more interest. You'll come back to realize, we're going to come back to realizing as we go through this story, the best equivalent is paying the minimum payment on your credit card by borrowing money off of another credit card and doing this circular game. It's being done on a government level. It's being done on a nationwide level. Commenting on the reading, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen claimed that interest costs on the current debt are manageable. Nevertheless, she urged policymakers to act swiftly. The president, Joe Biden, in case you don't know, if you don't remember who is supposed to be, has proposed a series of measures that would reduce our deficits over time while investing in the economy, she told CNBC. And this is something we need to do going forward. She did not elaborate on these measures. If you've ever known somebody that was drowning in debt but in denial. And you were like, man, you're going to have to get in front of this. And they'll always tell you they have some sort of plan. And that plan always entails something down the road that they're going to do. You know, they're $100,000 in debt, but they pay $5 extra on top of their minimum payment on their credit card every month. And this is their plan to get ahead of this debt, even while they're still running up the same credit card. But as long as I pay $5 extra a month on my minimum payment, I'm going to get ahead of this at some point someday. It's always this denial. All my whole life, I've, from time to time, I've heard the government come out with some sort of plan to get ahead of this. As she says, you know, to reduce our deficits over time. And it's always over time. It's always going to be someday. And I can tell you, because I've been alive longer than probably a lot of you, that that day, it will never come. I heard these same things being said back in the 1980s. We're going to pay these in. We got a plan. You see, they come up with these budgets every year or so. And it's always a can kick. You know, they'll say, oh, we passed this budget, and 10 years from now, we're going to start paying this down. Only the next year, they do a different budget. Or 2 years from now, they do a different budget. And 10 years never comes. It's always more borrowing, more spending. While investing, we're going to be investing. They're always investing. Their investments never seem to pay off, do they? In fact, one of the key things we talk about here a lot, or I talk about here a lot, is we never actually know where these quote unquote investments actually go. We invested $250 billion in green energy. Where did the money go? Who got it? We don't know. They're not going to tell you. We paid $250 billion on infrastructure, my favorite. Infrastructure and education are two of my fave vague terms that they always invest in. We invested $1 billion in education. Where did the money go? That's a nice general term, but where did the money go? Again, if you talk to somebody in their personal life and you're like, man, you in debt, where did you spend the money? I invested that money in my own well-being. Yes, but where did you spend it? Where did it go? This country is so openly corrupt. The graft is so in your face. We all know. I mean, come on. Just common sense tells you, just like with the Ukraine, this money goes in. Everybody, it changes hands. It gets washed around. It gets laundered around. And everybody takes a little cut, and nobody knows where the money goes. You invest money in education. It's going in different people's pockets. It goes in different people's pockets. It gets washed around. Everybody gets paid off. And the roads still suck. You know, the education system continues to decline, and it doesn't ever get any better. The kids can't read, they can't write, they can't do arithmetic, but they know all about the Holocaust and whether or not they're transgender. And yet they spend more and more money on education. The money just gets washed around and goes in people's pockets. This is what corruption, utter corruption and graft looks like. U.S. debt spiked after Biden approved a bill in early June that removed the $31.4 trillion debt ceiling for 2 years, effectively allowing the government to keep borrowing without limits through 2024. The ceiling was suspended following repeated warnings from the Treasury that unless the step was taken, the country would default on its obligations. This debt ceiling thing, I remember when they passed this, this was another one of those things that at the time they said, This is what's going to get this under control. This was the measures they were taking that someday, and this was decades ago, someday this will fix our debt problem. You see, we're going to put a ceiling on the debt. We're going to put a ceiling on the debt. They said once they hit that ceiling, they will be forced to cut spending. This was pushed by the Republicans. They said this will be forced down the road. We can't do it right now. But you see, when we hit this debt ceiling someday down the road, Congress will be forced to cut spending and live within their means, just like the family balancing their checkbook. And unfortunately, it is just like too many American families balancing the checkbook. They just borrow more money. They, of course, wrote themselves an out that they could raise it, they could suspend it, they could do whatever. I have seen over my lifetime, I have seen this debt ceiling come and go. The history on it. Oh, we're going to hit the debt ceiling. They always raise it. They always remove it. They always suspend it. They bump it up a little more and keep on borrowing. It's always a someday. Someday the government's going to hit the debt ceiling. Then they're going to have to cut spending. They can't. They're at the point they literally can't do it. As a result of this, debt spiked to $32 trillion less than 2 weeks after the bill was approved and has grown ever since. By comparison, 4 decades ago, national debt stood at around $907 billion. According to projections from the Congressional Budget Office, at its current pace, U.S. national debt is on track to nearly double in size within the next 3 decades. And I can assure you it's worse than that because compound interest works that way. You see, when your interest is being compounded, this is the way you sink deeper and deeper and deeper into debt. It's always going up. You're always owing more and more interest. Look, I always laugh when the topics come up and we're going to get somebody hand-wringing over this as if this is somehow reversible. We're way beyond the point of reversible. Again, I'm old enough back in the day. I remember back in the 90s when Ross Perot came out and was running for president. He was mocked and ridiculed, even though he was very rich and, you know, was not a stupid man. And he was saying, if we don't do this now, if we don't tackle this, this is our last window of opportunity. He said, this is our last window of opportunity. We can get on top of this now. Of course, he was ridiculed and eventually pushed off of the political. They actually changed. He did well enough in the debates. They actually changed the rules to make sure that someone like him couldn't come up as an independent candidate ever again and compete in the debates. He said, though, that at that time, he said, this is our last opportunity. It's going to be too late. We're going to have to take our medicine now and actually get the budget under control. By the way, he came out at one point when he was running for president and said that he had people come onto his estate, basically like a black ops team come on his estate. And I remember at the time, people like Rush Limbaugh mocked him as being crazy, as being a loony. Of course, knowing what we know now versus what we didn't know then, it doesn't sound so loony that they would literally threaten to kill him if he didn't shut up and go away. The point being, though, Ross Perot warned everybody back then. It's just like, I'm going to try not to get on a tangent. I always have made this joke, like, you know, because as you get older, you see cycles and you see people coming up with new ideas that aren't new, like, at all. And I've often made the joke that sometimes I wonder if the prophets, and it's just a joke, don't really read more into it. But I say, I've made the joke that sometimes, you know, I wonder if the prophets, like in the Bible, you know, actually heard from God, or maybe they just got old enough that, like, when they looked around and the government was coming up with this new idea and they were like, well, I've seen this shit before. I already know how this is going to work. I can come up here and tell you right now that if you do this, this is going to be the result. You know, they just seen the pattern. Like I say, it's just a joke. I'm not saying they didn't really hear from God. But the point is, when you get older, you see all of this. And you see it come and you see it go and they do the same old things. We're going to address this someday. Ross Perot said, at this time, this is what we got. He was like a prophet. The point is, he was like a prophet. He came up and he warned everybody, this is the last opportunity we've got to tackle this. And we didn't. Instead, they voted for Bill Clinton because women liked his hair. Yes, I literally remember women at the time saying, well, I'm voting for Bill Clinton because I think he's kind of hot in a way, and I really like his hair. Women's suffrage, there was another great idea. People voted for Bill Clinton instead. And now here we are all these decades later, and it's too late. I'm sorry. These people were going to get into the hand-wringing about, oh, we got to turn this around. That ship sailed a long time ago. I don't believe it's mathematically possible to turn it around. And this leads you then to ask the question, then what? Then, you know, really, if it's too late, then what's the answer? As a result, let's see here. Where are we at? Now, we already read that part. Maya McGuinness, the president of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. Okay. Yes, the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget says the latest milestone is worrisome. Worrisome, you say? I think we have done past the... the point of worrisome. Maya McGinnis says the United States has hit a new milestone that no one will be proud of. Our gross national debt just surpassed $33 trillion. Debt held by the public, meanwhile, recently surpassed $26 trillion. We're becoming numb to these huge numbers, but it doesn't make them any less dangerous, she told Fox Business. Her statement was echoed by Sean Snaith, an economist at the University of Central Florida, who told the news outlet that the reading is, quote, a warning shot across the U.S. government's bow that it needs to right its fiscal ship. You can't just spend trillions of dollars more than you have in revenue every year and expect no ill consequences, he warned. But they have done that. They've done that for decades. They've done that for decades and decades and decades. And so far, nothing's happened. And this is why the naysayers will sit here and say it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what kind of debts we run up. Nothing's going to happen. This is the way of the fool. Fool will sit there and say, well, it hadn't happened yet. So that he means it can never happen. But it will happen. It's like the old saying, you know, how did you go bankrupt? Very slowly and then suddenly very quickly. Many of you have probably had these sort of things happen in your own lives. Everything seems to be going fine. I mean, yes, you're accumulating debt and you're getting further in and a little bit more buried, but you're still able to manage it. You're still able to move money around and get your payments made until all of a sudden you can't. And then like the day that you can't, it's not like, oh, I'm $20 short. All of a sudden it's just like you pull the rug out from under and everything collapses and you can't afford to pay that. Anybody who's been through that in their personal finances, and more people have gone through that. Rest assured, it doesn't work any different for the government. They can sit here and do this until they can't. Again, it'll work this way in your own financial situation. Again, many of you may have or may be going through this already. You're able to make those minimum payments. You're able to keep on getting by. You just keep using your credit card to make up the gap in your budget. And as long as you can make those minimum payments, and then it gets a little tougher and your minimum payments are getting a little bigger. And so you stop using that card and use this other card because then the minimum payments are smaller and you're still able to manage them. And then one day you just can't. And all of a sudden it's like you can't pay anything. It's just amazing. You stop and it's like all of a sudden you can't make any payments. You're officially broke. It will work that way for the government. One day, they just won't be able to. And then the whole thing comes crashing down. Now, this has consequences for everybody else. Because if the government goes broke, it means that basically the whole system is going to come collapsing. We're all going to be broke. Now, a lot of us are more broke than others, so it'll be less of a shock for us. But for those who are used to the idea of having money, all of a sudden they're going to be really shocked and they're going to be really upset because they're going to be broke. They have further to fall. However, the government going broke is not necessarily a bad thing. Again, you have to take these things on the whole. You have to look at and consider the vast amount of wickedness and evil that the government perpetuates upon the people that live here, upon the people over which they rule. They perpetuate all of this weird social programs, all of this, these things that are bad for families and bad for society. They perpetuate all of this wickedness and evil. And yet their power comes from money. Their power comes from the fact that they can pay men with guns to come and shoot you if you don't do what they say. That's what it always comes down to. They can dress it up. They can talk about our democracy values of who we are. They can talk about, they can hang all of this window dressing on it that they want to. But at the end of the day, their power comes from the fact that if you don't do what they say, they have the ability to send men with guns to force you to do it or put you in a cage or just shoot you or just shoot and kill you and get away with it. And nobody can hold them accountable. They can do that. That's where their power comes from. But the men with guns show up because they're being paid by the government. When the government, and by extension, those who run the government, when they lose the ability to pay the men with guns to come force you to do what they say, the men with guns aren't going to come. They're going to come do it for free. I'm going to tell the men with guns, hey, these people aren't doing what we say. Go over there and shoot them. And the ones you don't shoot, we're going to lock up in prison. And the guys with guns are like, we haven't been paid in 2 months. Go to hell. Why do I want to do that? There's nothing in it for me. You see, this is where their power comes from. So it's not all bad news. I read these stories. It's not all bad news. It's bad things coming. Basically, people are going to be really broke because basically the dollar is going to become worthless at some point. It's going to get hard as that critical mass approaches. They're going to impose ridiculous austerity on everybody. Because you see, for the government to default on debt means the banks would have to eat it. Remember, the government doesn't owe this to themselves. They owe it to the banks, and the banks aren't going to eat nothing. So they're going to try to force the people, and they're going to morally lecture you. They're going to say, oh, you have a moral obligation to pay these debts. You owe them. When's the last time the government spent money on anything that you had a say in? Never. It'd be like, oh, well, your neighbor ran up his credit cards beyond what he can pay. You have a moral obligation to pay that because he took those debts out in your name. He stole your identity. You know, he stole your identity. He checked your mailbox and got your credit card out and ran it up without your authorization. Would you feel like you were obligated then to pay your credit card? Like you had a moral obligation because your neighbor ran up your credit card? No. Government didn't ask me about any of this crap. Their end game plan, the bank's end game plan is always to seize the assets. Remember, they make this quote unquote money out of nothing. They create this debt. It's numbers on a computer. We don't owe them anything. They created it out of the ether. They literally borrowed the money into existence. They lent the money into existence. That's how the system works. People just think like they print this money and then like everybody has it. When did you get yours? You didn't. It has to be lent into existence. The people are tapped out. They can't lend it into existence to inflate it to the people any longer. So they're down to the borrower of last resort, which is the government. And at some point, the government will be tapped out. But remember, they created this debt money out of nothing. Their end game is always to seize the assets. They get the assets in exchange for money that they created that costs them nothing. They just entered money into a computer. This is how fractional reserve banking, part of the usury system, how it works. They get the things. They get the stuff. This is why you're going to own nothing and be happy and they'll own everything. They get the stuff in exchange for removing numbers on a computer that they put there in the first place. It's all a scam. This is a ridiculous scam. But they're going to come at you. I guarantee you they're going to come at you with this and say that you have a moral obligation to pay it, that you have to give it to them because otherwise you're somehow an immoral person because you're not paying these debts. You could collapse. I tell you, people always talk about, you know, the people having the power. And you, in a way, the people do. They won't because they're enslaved in their minds. Let me tell you something. If everybody in the country today defaulted on their credit card debts, if everybody in the country, not even the stuff they owe money on that are tangible things, just their debts that don't have liens on them, just their unsecured, I knew I'd find the word, just their unsecured debts. If you default on your credit card, they can ruin your credit rating, but they can't come and get your stuff. If everybody in the country defaulted on their credit card debts today, it would crash the banking sector. Remember, the banks are the ones who hold the card here. The banks are the ones who hold the power over the government, who hold all the cards here. If the people just defaulted, they would be hung out there. And then you'd see some scurrying about. Of course, people aren't going to do that. People are well-trained. But I'm just saying, as a matter of technical fact, if everybody, every private citizen just said, well, we're just not going to pay it anymore. What are you going to do? You'd be scrambling around. What are they going to do? They'd probably demand first off that the government somehow force you to do it. But again, if everybody did it, the government doesn't have the ability to force everybody to turn around and be slaves to the banks. It's just an interesting mental exercise. It's not going to actually happen, but it is an interesting mental exercise. Now again, as we get ready to wrap up, the Great Reset thing, the whole, I referenced earlier, everybody's familiar, you know, the whole, you will own nothing and be happy, which implies they will own everything. You know, that's their end game plan. That's the way they see that working out. I see a lot of potential flaws in this plan because it requires everybody willfully going along with the idea. But I see a lot of potential problems with that plan. Ultimately, what I think is more likely to happen is just simply one day the government can't pay anymore. And that's the borrower of last resort. They can no longer expand it. And the whole house of cards comes tumbling down. And then perhaps we'll wind up with a great reset of a complete, entirely different type. Or at least perhaps we can hope so. I'm going to wrap up on that note. Thank you for joining us for today's show. I hope it was interesting. I hope you got something out of it. As I said earlier, I hope you will get a chance to check out all our great content here Monday through Friday. We have something new up every day. Tomorrow will be my Parish of the Patriots show. If for some reason you haven't checked that out, hope you do. Matt Johnson's content goes up Wednesdays and Thursdays. The Orthodox Nationalist on Wednesdays and his daily Nationalist show on Thursday. And of course, I'll be back to close the week out with you here on Friday as well for the Daily Nationalist. So as always, I do ask that you keep the faith. I hope you'll keep the faith. And we will hopefully see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.